All right, if you are going to follow along with me in your own Bible, turn it to the book of Numbers, not Leviticus. We were stuck there for a while. On to the book of Numbers, chapter 1. Now, if you hate math, don't panic. You're still going to enjoy this book. Though it's called the book of Numbers, it's not a math book. You can all take a deep sigh of relief there. What this book deals with is a numbering of the nation of Israel, and it's kind of a constant numbering within the book. It's God constantly taking a census of something. It begins with a census, it ends with a census, and everything in between is a census. Numberings of the people, numberings of the families, numberings of the priestly tribes, you name it. The Lord brings it to attention and numbers it in this book. And that is not because God needs the info. Like, all right, I got them out of Egypt. Let's see what we got to deal with here. Let's count up the people. Let's see what we got. No, the Lord knew every single person that he delivered. The Lord knew every person that was there at the beginning of this book, every person that will be there at the end of this book. It wasn't for the sake of information that the Lord does this constant numbering of the people. It's for the purpose of organization. This is the Lord getting his people organized and ready to head out into the wilderness to make the trek from the foot of Mount Sinai into the promised land of Canaan. So if you love organization, or if you have a little OCD in you, this is the book for you. It's all about organization. Numbers continues on in the chronology that we began in our Old Testament study. The chronology of the nation of Israel, and this book records for us the nation wandering around in the desert because of their disobedience. That really is the theme of the book. It is the desert wanderings, wandering around in the desert. That's the theme of the book. The theme song of the book, On the Road Again by Willie Nelson. You need to change some words, but there's your theme and there's your theme song for the book. And as I've stated a few times now, that journey from the foot of Mount Sinai into the promised land should have taken them, if they were traveling at a reasonable pace, less than 2 weeks. And if you want to go ahead and flip ahead to Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 2, you can see that for yourself. The Bible tells us itself that it would have taken 11 days to travel from the foot of Sinai and into the promised land. But you know what happened. It took them nearly 40 years to make that journey because they went mile after mile after mile and never really got anywhere. Why? Because of their disobedience, because of their sin. No progress in all of that travel. So these studies are a good wake-up call for those who are sort of going in circles in their walk with the Lord. It is a warning about wasted years. It's an announcement that sometimes the dry spells that we go through and the running around in circles that we do in our faith, well, we have no one to blame for that but ourselves. Now, it is true the Lord will take us into the desert from time to time. He'll put us in those situations for our learning, for our growth, for our development in our faith. But the Lord never intends to leave us there or get us stuck there. But a lot of times we get ourselves stuck there. And it all comes down to that very thing of hearing the word of the Lord, trusting and obeying his word, and following him in our walk with him. So it really is the theme that keeps repeating itself in this book. So this book is ideally suited for the Christian that has been a Christian for years and years and years, and they've never really changed. They've never really grown. They've been serving the Lord and walking with him by profession for a very long time. And yet, really, to be honest, they're the same person now as they were when they began with the Lord. That should never, ever happen. So we're learning good lessons from the nation of Israel in this book. And if that's your tendency to just kind of get stuck, bogged down in your walk with the Lord, never making much progress, if that's your state in your spiritual state, then you really need to study this book with me. Like, don't miss a single study. Don't miss a single night. You need to be here because that lesson is going to keep getting repeated that you can't make any spiritual progress unless you obey God and walk with him by faith. In the first 12 verses of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, I don't know if you realize it or not, but Paul is talking about the book of Numbers. He is directly referring to the book that we're studying right now. And Paul says there is a lot to learn from in this book, the book of Numbers. But it's one of those deals where you're learning good examples from very bad examples. And it is a great book to study. It's going to start slow because of these numberings, this census taking. It's going to bog down a few times because of the census taking. But filtered out through all of these numberings of the people are these terrific stories. I mean, some of the most fantastic stories in the Bible you'll find in this book. So it's going to be very exciting once we get to those sections. But just know that what you're studying in this book from beginning to end is you're studying failure. And you're learning lessons. Okay, I see the failure, Lord. I see what they did wrong. And I'm not going to go in that same direction. I'm not going to subject myself and my walk with you to those same failures. Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the first 12 verses, encourages us to not do what the nation of Israel did do in the book of Numbers. Paul says, don't lust after evil as they did, verse 6. Don't become idolaters as they did, verse 7. Don't become gluttons, drunkards, and wild partiers, verse 7. Don't be sexually immoral as they were, verse 8. Don't tempt Christ as they did, verse 9. Don't complain as they did over and over, verse 10. So Paul says, learn good examples from their bad examples, verse 11, and be better than them when it comes to self-evaluation, self-examination, self-judgment, verse 12. So let's get started taking a look at this book, learning from bad examples, but we start with a good word from the Lord and his order for chapter 1 of the book. Verse 1, now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of meeting, on the first day of the second month, in the second year, after they had come out of the land of Egypt. So let's stop right there. Genesis was the book of beginnings, written by Moses. Exodus was the story of the deliverance of the nation of Israel, written by Moses. Leviticus then carries us into that next section of Israel's life, written by Moses, the book of Numbers, and also Deuteronomy, written by Moses. Ultimate author, divine author, God, human element, human author, Moses. The book of Genesis covered a big period of time because it was giving us the beginnings, the origins of like everything, including the nation of Israel, through whom the Lord would reveal himself to the world and offer salvation to the world. Then we come to the book of Exodus, and as we studied, that covers a period of about 1 year. It is the nation of Israel's history in their first year. Then you come to the book of Leviticus, and that details out the next month of the history of the nation of Israel. So that's 1 year and 1 month in the bag. And now you come to Numbers, and Numbers tells us at the very beginning, in verse 1, that it was on the second year, in the second month, on the first day of that year. So just get this. Exodus, year 1, the next month, Leviticus. Now we come to Numbers after 1 year and after 1 month. We're in the second year, in the second month, the first day of that month. And this book now is going to cover the next approximately 38 to 39 years of their history. Verse 2, take a census, this is what the Lord said, take a census of all the congregation of the children of Israel by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male individually, verse 3, from 20 years old and above, all who are able to go to war in Israel. You and Aaron shall number them by their names. So Israel has been completely immobile for a year and a half. And we now, in the book of Numbers, have the completed tabernacle. It is built. It is in use. We have the instruction from the Lord, the commandments of the Lord, the law of the Lord. All of that has been given. And we think to ourselves that we should be seeing movement from the nation of Israel pretty soon. But that is getting a little ahead of ourselves. We won't see the nation budge from this spot until Numbers chapter 10, which is approximately 19 days later. And I already gave you the reason for that. Organization. It takes a whole lot of organization to successfully move 3 million people through the desert. That's what God is taking care of first. And job number one for organization, job number one for mobilization is to begin getting a head count of all those that are eligible and capable of military service. That's a good place to start. So God is forming a military. He's doing a draft. He's not just, you know, taking numbers. Well, in case we need them, let's see how many could be capable of fighting for us. It's not just like a census to find out what could be there if needed. This is God taking names and drafting them into military service. So if you were a male and you were of the right age and there's nothing physically wrong with you to keep you from military service, then congratulations, you've just been drafted into God's army. This was the original IDF. You know what the IDF is? That's what Israel calls their military, the Israel Defense Forces. So I really appreciate the fact here that God protects females from having to engage in armed warfare. Somehow, some people view that as inequality, unfair. I just see that as propriety. I see that as the proper thing to do. I could not, as a man, sit back and watch my wife go off to war or my daughter go off to war, knowing that they would come under fire, they would be fired at, they would be making their way through bombs and landmines. I just could not, in good conscience, sit back and support something like that. And I think God has the same heart in him. He does not call for women to serve in the military, only men. You know, if you guys are going to fight over something, if you got to go to war for something, just let the men take care of that and let the women be protected. And personally, I don't see how a woman could have a problem with that, but we are where we are in the history of our world. And if there's anything that could be disagreed over, it will be disagreed over. I also appreciate here that there's no maximum age for service in God's army. Usually the Lord gives a minimum age and a maximum age, but when it comes to fighting for the nation in warfare, he gives the minimum age of 20, but he gives no maximum age. That makes me feel good as a 46-year-old. The U.S. military and the U.S. law enforcement agencies across this country usually do have some kind of maximum age restriction. Usually it's right about 37 years old. So if you're over 37, I don't care how good a shape you're in. I don't care how well you've been training. I don't care how much you want to give yourself to the country in military service or law enforcement service. Probably you can't do it because there's a top age restriction. Not for the Lord. If you're healthy enough, you're in God's army. Probably flat foot and all. You know, for a while the U.S. military would let you go if you had flat feet, fallen arches and all that. Well, the Lord will take you if you're healthy enough to serve, and I like that. Verse 4. And with you there shall be a man from every tribe, each one the head of his father's house. Verse 5. These are the names of the men who shall stand with you, from Reuben, Elizur, the son of Shedeur. And by the way, as we're reading these names, just a reminder, if there is anyone in this fellowship that is getting ready to give birth and is looking for baby names, I would just remind you that the Bible is filled with terrific baby names. We're going to cover a bunch of them tonight. Shedeur, that's a good one. Verse 6, from Simeon, Shelumiel, the son of Jurishaddai, verse 7. From Judah, Nashon, the son of Amminadab, verse 8. From Wuzatruk to Issachar, Nethanel, the son of Zuar, verse 9. From Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Helon. Well, that can't be right. That's a terrible name for a guy. We'll go with Helon. That sounds better, doesn't it? I mean, can you imagine getting asked, what's your dad's name? Helen. How about your mom's name? Butch. I don't know. Verse 10, from the sons of Joseph, from Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Amahud, from Manasseh, Gamaliel, the son of Pedazur, verse 11, from Benjamin, Abidan, the son of Gideoni, verse 12, from Dan, Ahizer, the son of Amishadai, verse 13, from Asher, Pagiel, the son of Ochran, verse 14, from Gad, Eliasaph, the son of Duel. Now that guy sounds like he comes from a long history of gunslingers there. That's a guy to have in the military for sure. I know that was a bad joke. I debated whether to tell that joke or not. I actually rolled dice about it. Best out of four. It was a draw. Yeah. Another bad one. Verse 15. From Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Enan. Verse 16. These were chosen from the congregation, leaders of their father's tribes, heads of the divisions in Israel. So Moses and Aaron, of course, were in charge of this military draft. They were leading this whole thing. They were organizing this whole thing. But 3 million people, that is a tough number to sort through. That's going to take a while. You know, when you fast forward to David's numbering of the nation of Israel, something that displeased God because of the purpose in his heart for numbering the people, when David did it, it took David over a year to complete a good, solid, accurate numbering of the people. These folks are going to do it in 19 days, and here's why. The Lord has given Moses and Aaron help. He breaks this down by the individual tribe. He picks one man from each tribe to be sort of the tribal commander, the divisional commander there, the leader of that tribe, and then it's that guy's responsibility to sort through his own tribe and to present those names of those people that fall within that desired demographic, those 20-year-old and up male people that were fit for military service. Let's see, where are we? Oh, verse 17. Oh, by the way, you'll see the names of these 12 men repeatedly through the book of Numbers because they are, in fact, leaders of their tribes, commanders of their tribes, important people within the nation. Verse 17, then Moses and Aaron took these men who had been mentioned by name, 18, and they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month. Man, isn't it great to have leaders that are motivated? The Lord spoke this to them on the first day of the second month of the second year. And when did they get to work on it? The first day of the second month of the second year. They did not let the grass grow between their feet. They got right to this, fulfilling what the Lord had called them to do with this numbering of the people. Paul said a similar thing to Timothy. He said, commit these things that I'm sharing with you. The word of God, the gospel, commit these things to faithful men. That's what we need in the church as far as ministry is concerned. We need doers, not procrastinators. God called for this on the first day of the second month, and on the first day of the second month, Moses and Aaron get cooking on it, no delay. Reading on, and they recited their ancestry by families, by their father's houses, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, each one individually. Verse 19, as the Lord commanded Moses, so he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. Now, it may surprise you that the Jews were able to do this, just completely recite their entire ancestral lines from memory. But this was a pretty common practice throughout early history. Personally, I don't really know my family back any further than my grandparents. I know a little bit about my great-grandparents, and man, that's about it. I think there's people in my family that are alive today that I don't even know their names. So, you know, in modern times, we look at this as quite a feat, but to them, it was that important. It was something they taught their children to be able to recite those ancestral lines to the name and not miss anyone in their lineage from the beginning to the present. And by the time we edge near the coming of Christ in the Gospels, all of that history, that all of that genealogy that was in the memories of the people, they put to public record, and they had public records of that at the time of Christ. I believe the Lord inspired that because when Jesus comes onto the scene, it would be so important that they had accurate and legitimate genealogical records that would make Christ qualified to claim the throne of David as he was doing in his ministry. But here's the actual military count in chapter 1. This is verse 20. Now the children of Reuben, Israel's oldest son, so as per usual, God was born. Reuben, Israel's oldest son, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, every male individually from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, those who were numbered of the tribe of Reuben were 46,500 men. 46,500 men of military age and ability in the tribe of Reuben. Now, nearly 40 years later, in Numbers chapter 26, toward the end of this book, God is going to call for another numbering of this same demographic. Another numbering of males 20 and above that were capable of military service. So what I want to do is as we go through these, I'm going to give you those updates from chapter 26 of this book to show you the numbers that they began with and the numbers that they end with as we're closing out this book of Numbers. So Reuben begins with 46,500. By the time we get to Numbers chapter 26, the tribe of Reuben will have dropped to 43,730 military eligible men. So that is a 6% decrease. Verse 22, from the children of Simeon, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, of those who were numbered according to the number of names, every male individually from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 23, those who were numbered of the tribe of Simeon were 59,300. And again, when you get to Numbers 26, at the time of that updated census, the population of military eligible men has decreased in this tribe to 22,200. That is a staggering 63% decrease. Verse 24, from the children of Gad, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, those who were numbered of the tribe of Gad were 45,650. Numbers chapter 26, they ended up with 40,500. That is a loss of 11%. Verse 26, from the children of Judah, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war. Verse 27, those who were numbered of the tribe of Judah were 74,600. So that is the largest of the 12 tribes of Israel. 74,600. And Numbers chapter 26, they end up with 76,500. So the largest of the tribes is the first tribe on this list to actually grow their numbers of military eligible men. And that is an increase of 3% in that demographic. Verse 28, from the children of Issachar, their genealogies by their families. If you're asking, is he really going to read all this? Yes, he is. I try to do this as much as possible. We're chapter by chapter, verse by verse, right? So only in rare occasions do we summarize and skip. So yes, I am going to read all this. And now I lost my place. 28. From the children of Issachar, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, 29, those who were numbered of the tribe of Issachar were 54,400. Numbers chapter 26, they will end up with 64,300. That is an 18% increase. Kudos to them. Verse 30. From the children of Zebulun, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war. Those who were numbered of the tribe of Zebulun were 57,400. They would end up with 60,500. That is a 5% increase. Verse 32. From the sons of Joseph, the children of Ephraim, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 33, those who were numbered of the tribe of Ephraim were 40,500. They would end up with 32,500. That is the second lowest on the list. That is a 20% decrease by the time we get to Numbers chapter 26. Verse 34, from the children of Manasseh, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 35, those who were numbered of the tribe of Manasseh were 32,200. That is initially the smallest tribe of the 12 tribes of Israel. But in chapter 26, they ended up with 52,780. That is an increase of a whopping 64%. And the interesting thing about that is Ephraim, verse 32 and 33, and Manasseh, verse 34 and 35, those were the sons of Joseph. And I don't know if you remember how this all shook out, but they get Joseph's share between them. So these basically become the two tribes of Joseph. They're considered a part of the 12. It's very complicated. But of these two sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, they end up switching places. Ephraim is a very reasonable-sized tribe. And Manasseh is a very small tribe, and they almost completely and exactly switch places. Manasseh ends up being the larger tribe, and Ephraim ends up being one of the smaller tribes. And we're going to find out why as we study through this book. There's a reason why that takes place, an interesting story indeed. But for now, verse 36, from the children of Benjamin, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 37, those who were numbered of the tribe of Benjamin were 35,400, and they would end up with 45,600, an increase of 29%. Verse 38, from the children of Dan, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 39, those who were numbered of the tribe of Dan were 62,700, a large tribe, and they would end up with 64,400, a slight increase of 3%. Verse 40, from the children of Asher, their genealogies by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names, from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, those who were numbered of the tribe of Asher were 41,500. They would end up with 53,400. That is another increase of 29%. We're almost there. Verse 42, from the children of Naphtali, their generations by their families, by their father's house, according to the number of names from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war, verse 43, those who were numbered of the tribe of Naphtali were 53,400. So they would end up with 45,400. That is a decrease of 15%. All right, we got through that part. Now we get to the grand total, and we'll compare this in Numbers 1 with Numbers 26 for the grand total of this demographic, military-aged men capable of war and selected in this draft by the Lord. Verse 44, these are the ones who were numbered, whom Moses and Aaron numbered with the leaders of Israel, 12 men, each one representing his father's house. So all who were numbered of the children of Israel by their fathers' houses from 20 years old and above, all who were able to go to war in Israel, all who were numbered were 603,550. So both from the book of Exodus and the book of Numbers, chapter 1, verse 46, we derive from that very conservative estimates about the population of the nation of Israel coming out of the land of Egypt and into their freedom. If you remember before, I told you about 3 million people is a conservative estimate. And it really is, because we're just counting the men that are capable of military service. This is not males under the age of 20. This is not males over the age and over the capability of being able to serve. This is not even all the males, and we're at 600,000 of them. So that if you just factor that out by family, how many people would that be if you figured out roughly if each person, if each man has a wife and a child, or maybe a wife and two children? Very, very conservative numbers for Jewish families, but that accounts for those males that didn't have wives and children. All in all, very conservatively, 3 million people. I don't think it's ridiculous to guess that this number could be as high as 5 million people, but we're just going to take that conservative estimate and stick with it all the way through. We'll say approximately 3 million people, and that is a staggering number of people. If you took 3 million people and you put them all in a line, that line would be 10 miles wide and 100 miles long. That's how many people we're talking about here. They're all gathered and camped around this little square in town, right? The tabernacle. You've got to move all of those people. You're certainly going to need a huge army to defend that many people, because there are a lot of ites out there, a lot of Canaanites and Amorites and Perizzites. There are a lot of enemies. There is going to be war, and that's why the Lord starts with this. He raises up this army in order to protect the people, and the Lord finds, I think, according to the number of people in the nation, a good number, an adequate number of men to serve in his military, especially when you consider that when they're fighting, if they're doing what they're supposed to do, they're going to have the Lord's help too. So it's not just 600 men strong. It's 600 men strong and one God strong. So that's a major majority in any fighting situation. But we come to the updated numbers. Numbers chapter 26 is going to tell us that the military census that is taken in that chapter, those numbers drop to 601,730 military eligible men. So that is a 3% drop in the overall numbers. Now, you can look at this in two different ways. First of all, you're tempted to think that the loss of population must have been because of the harsh desert conditions. And you'd want to ask, well, why didn't they lose even more then? But if that's the direction your thinking is going, you're headed in the wrong direction with your thinking. Because yes, conditions were harsh. It was an arid atmosphere. It was dry. You couldn't get water for that many people. You needed miracles to make that happen. But folks, the miracles did happen. The truth is God pampered these people every step of the way. We're told in the scriptures, their clothes and their shoes didn't even wear out. God did pamper them all along the way. He gave them, even in the midst of that arid desert wandering, he gave them the perfect environment for their growth. So then that changes the direction of your thinking, and you come back to this question. Okay, considering that, considering how God pampered the nation, even in the midst of those harsh circumstances and surroundings, then why didn't they grow more? Remember the book of Exodus? No matter how strict and how harsh that bondage got, the nation of Israel just kept growing. But out in those 38 to 39 years of desert wandering, they didn't grow. The number decreased, and why is that? Well, the answer is simple. They kept doing things in their sin and disobedience, and the things that they were doing had consequences to them. Essentially, they were killing themselves off by their own sin. You're going to see stories like that all through this book. And you'll just have to take my word for that for now. But as we study through this, compile all of these future studies together, and you're going to see it. They could have grown. They had every reason to grow. God made that growth available to them. He provided the perfect atmosphere amidst the harshness, and yet they didn't grow because of their disobedience. And because of their disobedience, it caused the constant loss of life among the nation. Verse 47, but the Levites were not numbered among them by their father's tribe. For the Lord had spoken to Moses, saying, only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor take a census of them among the children of Israel. But you shall appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, over all its furnishings, and over all things that belong to it. They shall carry the tabernacle and all its furnishings. They shall attend to it and camp around the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle is to go forward, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be set up, the Levites shall set it up. The outsider who comes near shall be put to death. So no one else is allowed to butt in, whether they had good intentions or not. You couldn't help them. Ministry had to bear the full burden of the work. And if the minister's heart was right, then it would be a joy to them to do so. In Numbers 3 and 4, God is going to call for a census of males from the tribe of Levi who are between the ages of 30 to 50. And that is in order to number and assign individual Levites to handle all of the respective responsibilities of the tabernacle. That would be tear down, set up, transport, every bit of it. Lots of stuff to do. And the Lord was taking that census for the purpose of assigning those duties and responsibilities. But for now, the Lord says, in this numbering, you leave the Levites out of it. They are priests, not soldiers. They're not going to be fighting. They're not going to be gone to war. They're going to be managing worship. That's their singular sanctified purpose. That's what God called them to. And the Lord did not want that to get interrupted. Verse 52, the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, everyone by his own camp, everyone by his own standard. That doesn't mean the way they want to do things. It's up to them. However y'all want to do it. A standard is a flag or a banner. And in this case, we're talking about flags or banners that are going to be used to signify tribal groupings. We're going to see that in the next chapter. The Lord is going to group a handful of the tribes together under one grouping, one tribal grouping. He's going to assign a tribal name to that. He's going to give them a flag. And that banner is going to be something that they set up in their encampment, and it's going to be the flag that they march under. And as we studied in Revelation, these banners are going to be descriptive of the cherubim in heaven. And we know that the cherubim are descriptive of the four Gospels. It's all sort of just beautifully ties in together. And we'll talk about that next week. But for now, let's read on. They were to pitch their tents according to their armies. So if you didn't believe it before, you should believe it now, because we see it right here. These were not just people that the Lord was getting on the paper in case he needed them. Get a list in case we need to call them up. All right, you see that right here. This is the drafting of an army. They're already drafted. They're already selected by the Lord. Verse 53, but the Levites shall camp around the tabernacle of the testimony, that there may be no wrath on the congregation of the children of Israel. And the Levites shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of the testimony. Verse 54, thus the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so they did. So the Lord ends this chapter on this final word to the nation of Israel, that they not allow the work of the sanctuary to be interrupted with anything else. Ministry was to keep their consecrated concentration on ministry. They were not to break from that. They were not to be distracted from that with other responsibilities. You have other people step in and deal with those fires because the priests were to deal with the fire that was burning in the sanctuary. They were to keep those fires burning bright and those sacrifices happening. They were to keep worship taking place in the sanctuary to bless and honor the Lord. It is the same conclusion that the apostles reached in Acts chapter 6 when things started to get busy with physical stuff, physical ministry stuff. And the apostles were realizing the real potential, the real possibility of them getting bogged down in other responsibilities and that detracting from their time spent in prayer and study of the word, so that the delivery of the word to the congregation was as effective as the Lord would want it to be. So we read in Acts chapter 6, verses 3 and 4, "Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you seven men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business, but we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word." Now, I know that disappoints many people because they want their pastor to be able to do it all. And they feel as though prayer and study and sermon prep and sermon delivery, is that really enough to keep a pastor busy? On behalf of pastors everywhere, let me assure you, it is more than enough. Most pastors deliver one message a week, but for the teaching pastors, most teaching pastors deliver two sermons, two messages a week. And I can tell you, that is a tough schedule to stay on top of. And you know how it works. If I get drug away from that, it detracts from that. If I have to do other things, if I have to go around putting out fellowship fires when there are other people capable of stepping up and putting out those fires so that ministry could stay in spiritual ministry, that's a huge help. I'm thankful that you guys give me that grace to be able to keep in prayer and keep in study. I assure you I'm doing stuff. I assure you I'm working. And I'm thankful that I don't have excessive items under my care. It is very important that ministry stay immersed in ministry. And that is the word that the Lord finishes with here. Now, we are off to a very slow start in the book. And we're going to try to move, like we did tonight, we're going to try to move through the numberings pretty quickly. I'll make sure we get the lessons and the truths that we need out of them. We're going to try to move through them pretty quickly. So hang in there as we go through these numberings. I really want to encourage you to be looking forward to these studies, to be here, to be present, and not just present bodily, but present in heart, really tuned in to these lessons, because it's a great book study. I know it may sound a lot like Leviticus in places, but it's a very different book from Leviticus, and I think it's going to richly bless you as you study it with me together.